It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Great form by you hitting play on this podcast. Now, check out Same Racer, the brand new racing app for same race multi-tips. Same Racer. Download from the App Store and Google Play. Powered by BlueBet.
Gamble responsibly. Call 1-800-858-858.
Yablet! Four goals to Yablet.
Oh, Jasperenko, you're guilty.
Justin Madden's got the set. One hand.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it. Talk about a he-man.
Dream rises to the top. He is an absolute legend of the game.
This is your football life with Rex Hunt for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Now, we do welcome you right around Australia, and the response to our series has been absolutely magnificent, and the stars and legends just keep on lining up for a marvellous interview. And as usual, I'm going to try and give you a few clues, and before you say, I know who this is. The VFL-AFL is a wonderful Australian game, folks, and thousands of men have played the game at this, the highest level. Some play and move on, others have more of an impact. And our guest today, when the history of the game is written, will take his rightful spot. He played 250 games and kicked 549 goals for the Caringbush that I call them. It is Collingwood. A 1990 Premiership player. Three times the VFL-AFL Team of the Year. Five times Collingwood leading goal kicker. A Collingwood Team of the Century. And an inductee into the Australian Football Hall of Fame. Have you got it yet? Well, there was a few stars around that time. I'll give you the brain buster. He is known as the Macedonian Marvel. That's right. He is Peter Dacos. And Dakes, we're back. And it's great to celebrate your footy life and welcome.
Good on you, Rexy. Thanks so much for having me on. I'm humbled, so thank you.
Well, you should be, because only the very, very best get on here. I've worked with you, I've broadcast, I've played one season against you. What a career. Take us back to the start when you grew up in South Melbourne and tell us about first you saying, I love this game and I'm going to make a real go at it.
Well, naturally, the game was sort of imparted onto me through my dad, who actually, when he came to Australia, sort of lived in South Melbourne, worked in Preston, but more importantly, started following the VFL and the South Melbourne down there at the end of Clarendon Street.
Yeah.
So dad was fell in love with the game, and naturally, as I sort of passed that on to me, and that's where I first learned to get a snapshot of the game. But then the second part to that is football commentary, and I reckon Lou Richards had a lot to do with me falling in love with the game too.
Yes.
Lou and Butch Gale and Jack Edwards and these guys that were calling games back in the late 60s, early 70s. So as a young kid, football was always, you know, where I wanted to be, and I took it up as a young fella playing in North Fitzroy at Alfred Crescent.
Yeah, and I believe in the under-11s, you didn't muck about. You got off just with a lazy seven, Marvel, did you?
Well, that was with Clifton Hill.
I
was just in the local park, and someone had spotted me, and I think asked me to have a kick with their local under-11 team because
yeah.
they were short of numbers, and I had a kick that night, and happened to get a few touches and then made my way. I'll always remember it. I actually walked from home, which was Scotchmere Street, Fitzroy, to where the zoo is.
Gee.
Down there, I walked there, played the game, and as you made mention, kicked a few goals.
Yeah,
and
you did.
And that was the start of my football outside of school hours. I started with the school team in grade three. So I was only a young fella, but... You know, sort of had started pretty early.
Yeah, and the Macedonian marvel goes back to when Mum and Dad met at a good old-fashioned dance at Fitzroy. Now they meet on the internet, and you don't know what you're going to get, but Mum and Dad went to the dance, and the rest is history. They produced this wonderful, wonderful legend of our game.
Oh, well, yeah, well, you know more about it than I.
Too right, I do.
Yeah, but, you're right, Mum and Dad met here. They did know each other from the village, but had married here in East Melbourne, and as you made mention, Fitzroy Town Hall was where they used to get out to on the Saturday night, and as part of the Macedonian community, and, the rest is written in history, I came along, yeah. And I have two siblings, a sister and a brother, and... yeah, so be it, as they say.
Can you remember as a kid Peter Dacos being above average, or did you practice some of those dribbling, worm-burning, mongrel punts, that sort of thing? Because that is your trademark, Here's Dakes on the boundary, right half forward flanks, it goes on and on for a goal! When was the first time you said, I reckon I can get this ball on a string?
I think as a kid, I think you go out there and play. I don't think there's any conditions, and I certainly don't... it's very hard to make comparisons at that age. I mean, you go out there and all you're doing is doing something you love. And I just thought it was something that was pretty much a part of everyone. Anyone that, I had a fantastic, if I can sort of take you back, I had a fantastic mentor or introduction into football. And that was a guy, a school teacher by the name of Vin Dam, who was our football coach at Alfred Crescent. He imparted some great football skills, and his education or what he passed on to me was just invaluable. And I can think back to, if anyone knows the Edinburgh Gardens and where Alfred Crescent Primary School is, across the road there used to be this old little sand oval. It's now sort of covered in a bit of grass, but it was only a mini oval. And every single night, and I'm not exaggerating, every single night, we'd have 20 boys congregate there after school, and away we'd go on the sand oval. And I remember one of the things was that when we're playing on this sand oval, if you fell, you made a mess of your legs. And so I suppose the first lesson there learnt was keep your feet.
Yeah.
And then the other thing he taught us to not do was bounce the ball. That was too easy. So he wanted us, if we were going to carry the ball, to touch the ground, which then taught us a little bit of balance and so on and so on. And I think it's just like anything. We can personalise our kicking, but at the end of the day, it's a touch sport, and it's a matter of getting the ball in your hand. And you can never, ever explain how hard you need to kick the thing 20 or 30 or 40 metres. You need to feel that. And in the end, it was just constant practice. And that really what got me over the line.
We're talking to Peter Dacos, a true legend of the game, 250 games for Collingwood, premiership player. My goodness gracious me, 5 times Collingwood leading goal kicker. You talk about, practicing as a kid, but it also is a bonus if you love the game and you have passion, and you had it in spades.
Well, and again, Rex, I mean, you make a really valid point. At the end of the day, we go out there and it's about the thing you're always told, and I sort of try and pass on to my kids, do something you love in life, because if you're going to put the extra time and effort in, it's not work. You're doing something you love. So, for me, the football was never too far away, whether it was a structured session through teachers or the local football team, or whether it was me just bouncing a ball or going to the park on my own or kicking the ball around, my room or living room or backyard. I mean, it was never too far away. So, yeah, I think, whether it be structured or unstructured, just so important. But the key to that was I was doing something I loved, and so for me it was never work, as they say.
Peter Dacos joins us, and Pete, I need to know a couple of things. When did you think, gee, I'm ready to go to the next level? And who came and saw you to eventually lead you to Victoria Park and the home of the most famous club in the competition?
Well, that goes back to 1977, and I was just a young 15-year-old, and a chap by the name of Fred Stabb, who unfortunately is no longer with us, Fred. But Fred had approached me to come down and have a run with Collingwood. I was in their zone. I was playing at Preston. I moved from Fitzroy to Preston mid-70s. And so that put me into the clutches or or the zone of Collingwood. Fred came and spoke to me. On a couple of occasions, and I actually declined the offer for two reasons. Firstly, thinking, you know, I didn't want to make a fool of myself, you know, heading down to the football club. I thought all I'm going to do is end up landing on my head and then having to come home with the tail between my legs. And the other reason was, I suppose, you probably felt at home. You know, there was probably a lot of self-doubt about your football nous or school. And, you know, I just didn't want to make a fool of myself. So, you know, there's a little bit of doubt as well. So it was only after a teammate of mine from the same team at Preston RSL, Paul Hepburn, was invited down that I thought, yeah, a little bit of company, a little bit of bravado, having a mate alongside me, that I ventured down there. And I was fortunate enough to play the second half of the year in the under-19s, and it just went on from there.
Who was coaching? Was Ronnie Richards coaching the under-19s?
Ronnie was in the reserves at the time, and Des Healy was
coach. He ran into Bluey Adams in one of those grand finals. They nearly killed each other. But Tommy, your first coach at senior level?
Yeah, well, 78, I ended up getting a few kicks playing under-19s in the early part of the year. And then by the midway mark of 78, I started training with the seniors. And, you know, I was 16 and I started playing seconds football, and I played the second half of the year. So that's where, you know, I ran into Tommy. And as a kid growing up, you would have had to have lived under a rock to have not known who Tommy Hafey was. And, you know, the fabulous Richmond teams, the late 60s and even into the early 70s.
Yes.
I remember as a kid watching the Richmond-Carlton clashes, and they were bloodbaths. And Tommy Hafey, well, for me, it was, and I remember in 77 when I went to the under-19s, Tommy took over Collingwood. He got them, I think they went from bottom in 76 to, he got them up within 12 months to play off in the grand final.
I was
fortunate enough to have him. And look, it was fantastic. I mean, I was just in awe of him. I was, you know, the use of a better term, gobsmacked, you know, when he was addressing us at training and I was under his sort of guidance. It was just sensational, Rex.
Yeah. Peter Dacos is our special guest, and on behalf of Tobin Brothers, we're celebrating the footy life of Dakes. Who were some of the more high-profile players who were at Victoria Park when you first walked in there as a youngster trying out for the under-19s? Because, you know, it's famous and folklore for the 1990 mob, you know, and we'll get to them after the break. But who were some of the high-profile players who were still at Victoria Park in probably the twilight of their career?
Well, in 78, when I started playing in the twos, I actually played in a game at Victoria Park, which could have been mistaken for a senior team. We had Len Thompson. I'm not sure if Max Richardson was there, but Ross Twiggy Dunn was there. I even played a game with Phil Carman.
Goodness me.
Who played in the reserves game. I think Ronnie Weirmouth had always was running around. So
I think Max had gone to Fitzroy, but you got the rest, and they were household names. But also, they will be in history for the wrong reasons of never playing in a Collingwood flag. It seems that you were always there before you got there, but, you know, luck didn't sort of fall away. But you now know, all those years ago, it was 25 years ago, that premierships are not just for the day, they're for life.
Well, they are, Rex, and it's what I hang my hat on these days with, you know, 1990. I mean, you know, trying to recall, I've been out of the game 22 years now, so trying to recall, you know, excerpts of different moments and whatnot's always hard, because people don't, you know, you might get one guy out of the blue, or some people that mention a game out at Waverley in 83 or 82 or whatever it may be, but because it's only a fleeting sort of mention, you know, once here or there, it's hard to, you know, regurgitate or sort of come back to it. Whereas 1990, it's just sort of, if it happened 5 years ago, I mean, don't matter where I go, I, you know, popped in to get my groceries early this year and I just wanted to get in, get out, and check out lady reminded me how it saved her marriage and how her husband was so happy he didn't come home for, you know, 2 weeks. And
Dake,
you know,
saving marriages, that's dizzy stuff, son.
Yeah, no, that's right. But you know where I'm coming from.
Yeah, I do.
And, you know, they're hard to come by. They're hard enough to win one, let alone back-to-back. I mean, people, you know, to win flags, there's a lot that has to fall into play. I mean, you've got injuries injuries naturally out of your control, but injuries, loss of form at the wrong time. You know, the timing of getting players up, you know, for the big game is you know that last Saturday in September, as they say, is all important. So the management of players, you know, it's a lot of things have to fall your way, and unfortunately, in football, you know, there are a lot of things out of your control, and there's always other teams that are coming up as well. So to win a flag, you've got to have performances. I think if you look across the board, even in 1990, you had some pretty big performances by certain players, which was always hard to replicate, you know, because they are out of the box sort of performances. And at the end of the day, it's just so hard to sort of repeat them. And that's why I look these days with these back-to-backs, which is just a phenomenal effort from a lot of these teams and clubs and players.
Peter Dacos is our special guest, and out of the break, Real Age, join us again as we continue this magnificent journey at Victoria Park, where a man has placed himself in the history of the game forever. 250 games, 549 goals from the man affectionately known as the Macedonian Marvel. And stick around, folks, because there's plenty more to come. And with Peter Dacos on This Is Your Football Life, but check us out on Twitter at Rex Football Life, and it's all for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Yabba! You're listening to This Is Your Football Life with Rex Hunt for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Dream rises to the top. He is an absolute legend of the game.
You're listening to This Is Your Football Life with Rex Hunt for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
And we're celebrating the footy life of Peter Dacos, the Macedonian Marvel. And thanks for joining us on behalf of Tobin Brothers, and we're celebrating lives. I need to touch on the Collywobbles. They were buried in 1990 on that Sunday morning by Lou Richards. But my goodness me, I suppose in the back of your mind, with the close calls with Tommy in grand finals, you'd wonder, when are we ever going to win one?
Yeah, well, I suppose, yeah, and it's a fair point again. You know, I did, as a kid, as a non-Collingwood supporter, I was a South Melbourne supporter as a kid, as we made mention earlier. You know, Collywobbles was around, and Collingwood had failed in grand finals. Then as a player, even in my own right, 1980, 81, I lost day grand finals, I lost the night grand final, lost the reserves grand final, under-19 grand final.
Goodness me.
And so I'm 20 years of age, played in 5 grand finals by the end of 81. And then it was another 9 years until we got that opportunity. And I will say, look, we went into that grand final in 1990, even though we thumped Essendon in the second semi to qualify for the grand final. There's always that as a player. There's always that. You don't come out and admit it, but there's always that little seed at the back of the head, you know, saying, we just can't fail. And as it turned out, it went our way.
Well, we'll get back to that very, very shortly, and I'll just reiterate for our folk around the country, you know, you've got blokes like Jonathan Brown, a legend of the game from Brisbane, 22 years of age, 3 premierships, and Mark Harvey, at 20 years of age, his first 2 years at Windy Hill were premierships. And sometimes you think, goodness me, like the kid in the lolly shop, Dakes, what about me? But we don't operate on what-ifs in this particular land. As an 18-year-old, you kicked 76 goals. Was that from the half-forward flank, because that was just an amazing effort, considering there's some decent full forwards around in your day?
That was 1981. I think it was 76. I'm not 70.
Yes, that's
76
it. Yep.
In there somewhere. I just turned 20, so I was 19, and I actually played 1980 in the centre and did really well. I missed 5 games and unfortunately with a knee injury and was actually the first player to have the arthroscope surgery. But having said that, Mark Williams arrived 81, which pushed me onto a flank, and Choco took over that central part of the ground. And in the end, again, you know, I had pretty good supply, but Craig Davis was running around. We didn't have a full forward, so it was shared and mixed amongst quite a few players.
Yeah. Tell us, Tommy got the flick and it eventually, went to Sydney. He'd gone, well, I think he went to Geelong after you and then to Sydney. So he'd been around and, of course, with a four-time premiership CV, he was well in contention. But tell us about when you first found out that Lee Matthews was going to be coach and your early years with the legendary Lee.
Well, yeah, Lee, 1985, I think Lee sort of arrived 86. 85, I did my knee, so I actually missed 12 months. I didn't play. And when Lee had arrived, I only actually ended up playing 20 games in about 20-odd games in 3 years. So I didn't get Lee until 88. Lee had arrived and took over 86. I think he took over after five or six losses. Bobby Rowe stepped aside and I had come back from my knee and then did my patella, so I didn't play a lot of games and then had feet problems. So I only played 20-odd games. But Lee Matthews arrived 86 and then sort of weeded out a lot of the boys, revisited the playing list and sort of about 20-odd players, 30 players of a list of around 60 fell by the wayside, and he then proceeded to bring some kids up from the under-19s, namely Gavin Brown and Francisca McGuan, Longhorst, and there was two or three other really good youngsters. So he clearly could identify talent. He had a game style he wanted in part. And we finished second bottom 87. Mm. Importantly, grounded some kids. We put some games into some kids. And by the end of 88, we were second top. So we went from bottom to second top. These kids now had played 40 games, and by the time, we go into 1990, they're 80-game players in four group.
They're young veterans, and you talk about the mindset between the years. 1990, this was your football life at Victoria Park. You're playing your old foe Essendon at the MCG on a beautiful day. If ever you're going to break the collywobbles, I believe this was it.
Again, I think you need, you need a little bit of luck in football, as in life. Right place, right time. You made mention about players playing for some, playing in grand finals at a very young age and, not understanding what all the commotion is about, the winning of grand finals. And, 1990, we go into that game. We had a little bit of luck, and our luck came when we drew against West Coast, because what had happened, sort of unbeknown to us, really, the way it sort of panned out was that we drew that game, and because of the rules at the time were that the games, there was no extended play or extra time given to get a result, so we had to replay that game. Essendon had a week off, which all teams welcomed at that time of the year, and but the thing was that they had to wait until we played the following week, get a result, and by the time they played, it was a 21-day turnaround.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
And they really, in the preliminary rounds, they'd beaten us twice in the preliminary rounds, finished on top of the ladder, and in the end, we went into that game and beat them by 10. So psychologically, the upper hand was with us. We go into the grand final. The Bombers kicked the first two. We kicked two late, and then the fight started and we took off in that second quarter.
Well, it's great to catch you, Dakes. Our time together on behalf of Tobin Brothers Celebrating Lives is nearly up. But, all of those guys you played with, we all would love to have Darren Mullane here. But it's just a very, very good lesson. We're not invincible. Alcohol is a killer. And it's the only blight on what is probably the most famous year in the history of the Collingwood Football Club, because the Collywobbles were just abolished.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was. I mean, and he was a huge part of it. It was fitting that he ended up with the football. And, again, there's two parts to it. I mean, Darren Mullane, the football, and Darren Mullane, the person. Football is football and kick a bit of leather, but at the end of the day, you come away having had that camaraderie and the friendships made. And the sad fact is he's not around today. And I will say that each time we get together and there is a reunion, or if the boys, sort of one or two of the boys, half a dozen of the boys get together, his name's never too far away.
No. And, always part of it.
Yeah, the club's had reunions and We've had Hall of Fames and whatnot, and he always rates a mention. He'll never be forgotten, and he was a super, super, super person.
Dakes, this has been just lovely, and I can feel, you know, that a lot of people will really, really be enjoying what you've said. We really appreciate your time today to celebrate your footy life, and as I said, without going over the top, when the history of the game is written, you'll take your rightful place, my friend, and thanks, Dakes, for giving us some time today.
Thank you so much, Rex, and thanks for your friendship. Thank you.
If you'd like to hear the extended version of this interview, check out facebook.com/Tobin Brothers Funerals, or you can follow us on Twitter at Rex Football Life. My goodness gracious me. This has been This Is Your Football Life. Thanks to Tobin Brothers Celebrating Lives. It's just been marvellous for James and the team to just find out some of these hidden secrets that we can celebrate now. And join us next week from 7:30 a.m. Sunday morning on 1116 SEN.
It's Tyre Power's Big Footy Final Sale. To kick things off, you can get the power to buy three and get one free on selected Toyo passenger car and SUV tyres. Tyre Power's Big Footy Final Sale can't last. Visit tyrepower.com.au now.